Since 1889, Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service has been a trusted name in the Richland Center area, providing compassionate care and support for families during difficult times. For assistance, call 608-647-4808. Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service, trusted by the community for over 135 years.
On WRCO-FM in Richland Center. News at 9 is sponsored by Pamela's Fine Jewelry in Spring Green, a full-service jewelry store featuring a wide variety of styles, and the Phoenix Center, family fun at its best. There's always something for everyone, including bowling, legendary pizza, and video games. It's 43 degrees at 9 o'clock.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. President Trump is set to call Russian President Vladimir Putin in about a half an hour from the White House. They'll be discussing an end to the war in Ukraine. After that phone call, the president is set to call Volodymyr Zelensky. Former President Biden thanking well-wishers on social media following his diagnosis of an aggressive form of prostate cancer. There is no cure for this stage of cancer, but hormone treatment does appear to be working, says ABC Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. Tara Narula.
We're talking about androgen deprivation therapy. That means depriving the body of testosterone or androgens, which we know is a fuel for prostate cancer cells. So by either blocking the production of testosterone or the ability of testosterone to reach the cells, you're hopefully slowing the growth. So we know that with prostate cancer of this stage, we usually use hormone therapy to basically improve quality of life, maybe give somebody more years. Of course, hormone therapy also comes with its own side effects.
More than 24 deaths caused by tornadoes over the weekend. This is ABC News. Pope Leo presiding over his inaugural Mass. Tens of thousands of people were there, including Vice President Vance and the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio. ABC's Maggie Rooley has more from Rome.
The Pope got straight to work. Just hours ago, he met with Vice President J.D. Vance and Secretary of State Marco Rubio. The Vatican is calling these talks cordial, saying that during the meeting, the two exchanged views on current international issues and that the Pope called for humanitarian law and negotiation in the areas of conflict. There was a fun moment as well during the meeting. Vance gave the Pope a Chicago Bears jersey with the name Pope Leo and the number 14 on the back. A nice little nod to the first American Pope from Chicago.
Britain has struck new agreements with the European Union on boosting defense cooperation, easing border checks, and making food easier to trade. The prime minister says the deals will slash red tape and grow the British economy. Russia has outlawed Amnesty International in the latest crackdown on dissidents and activists. Putin's government labeling it undesirable. This is ABC News.
Good morning. This is Pamela at Pamela's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Spring Green. Congratulations to those who have upcoming graduations. A special time for all those of all ages, from pre-K to a PhD. Stop by Pamela's for a great gift ideas for the perfect keepsake gift for your special graduate at Pamela's, where we will wrap your gift for free.
The best place to catch a Friday night fish dinner is the Phoenix Center. Dine in or carry out delicious deep-fried or baked fish. Fish is served from 4 to 8 p.m. Fridays only. The Phoenix Center serves food and fun every day. The pizza is out of this world, and after a great meal, make it an even better night with a game of bowling. The Phoenix Center is family fun at its best, open at 11 a.m. Monday through Sunday. The Phoenix Center, this area's go-to spot for good times and great food.
WRCO Hometown Weather Watch is sponsored by the Schultz Mortgage Team. Call 608-738-8765 and learn how to buy a home without needing 20% down.
Cloudy, breezy, and cool today. High temperatures in the low 60s. East winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tonight, cloudy with brisk winds. Showers likely late, a low of 42. Blustery and cool with rain tomorrow, possibly heavy at times, a high of 51. And east winds at 18 to 30 miles per hour. Tuesday night, breezy with more rain, a low of 43. And Wednesday, 55. Cloudy off and on with light showers and not as windy.
Energy efficiency and lower utility bills. ¿Quiere ahorrar en sus facturas de energía? Looking to save money on energy bills? Neighborhood Housing Services of Southwest Wisconsin offers energy efficiency programs to help homeowners cut costs while making their homes more comfortable. Lower your utility bills and reduce your carbon footprint with our expert solutions. Call 608-647-4949 to learn more.
Take in the great outdoors and take along insurance coverage you can count on. Hi, this is Julie at State Farm. We know that rush of freedom you can only get outdoors. Maybe you're taking on the trails in your ATV or zipping around your favorite course in your golf cart. At State Farm, we understand your passion. Whether your recreational vehicle is an off-road vehicle, a snowmobile, or a travel trailer, we can cover you. Our State Farm recreational vehicle insurance is designed with your needs in mind. And the premium may be less than you think. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hi, Travis with Wirtz Floor and Home. Want to improve your sleep quality? Maybe a mattress with a built-in cooling cover is just what you need from American Bedding that is made right here in Wisconsin. Stop down to our newly remodeled showroom and see why we have quickly become Spring Green's largest mattress dealer. With over a dozen mattresses on display, our expert staff will assist you in finding the perfect mattress to give you a quality night's sleep. Located on Highway 14 next to the Ring Brothers.
I can't believe how spotless my floors look after using the Swiffer Power Mop. No more dragging around a heavy mop and messy bucket. Now I get the same deep clean without all the work. Thanks to the powerful solution and scrubbing pad of the Swiffer Power Mop, dirt and grime don't stand a chance, and I don't break a sweat. Mic drop. I mean, mop drop. Swiffer Power Mop. Swiffer Power Mop. A smarter way to mop. Try it or your money back.
The Morning Show on WRCO FM 100.9 and WRCO.com, featuring real community conversations that matter to our community. The WRCO Morning Show studio is proudly sponsored by Richland Hospital, caring for the health of our community. Scott Industries, enjoy building strong futures. Osborne Stump Removal, clearing the way for what's next. And Sean's Auto Repair, keeping you on the road with service you can trust. Welcome to our morning show get-together today. It's our monthly visit with Representative Tony Kurtz, representing the 41st Assembly District. And today, Senator Howard Markline sits in as well with us. Good to see you gentlemen once again today. Hi, Howard.
Good morning, Phil.
Good
morning,
to have
Phil.
You. Tony, we just saw you at the Race for Grace on Saturday as well, didn't we?
Yeah, it was very nice. Yeah, and the weather was, it was a nice and cool morning. It was perfect for a run and a walk, and it was pretty neat to see all the firefighters and the police and sheriff's department from Richland County out there doing the walk and the run. That was pretty cool.
They were hoofing it.
They did a great job.
Doing a really good job.
Yep.
Howard, I presume you've been busy at community events lately as well.
Yeah, and so on Saturday I was at the Morel Fest parade, and then of course had a good steak dinner at the firehouse after that. And I ran into a number of people from Cazenovia, Lone Rock, etc., that were involved with the walk in Saturday morning. So it's good to connect with them. Decent turnout, I think, for Saturday for the parade in Muscadet. Some people remembered the weather a year ago was like in the 90s for that parade. And of course, on Saturday, it was pretty comfortable, like 65 degrees. I thought if you're walking in the parade and stuff, it's pretty comfortable. But I remember a year ago eating steaks too at the firehouse, and it was hot in there, with the heat and all the people in the fire station.
It's been a different spring, that's for sure.
It sure has. Yeah, it's dry. Gosh, we didn't get anything last Thursday. 6 drops maybe is about what we got in some places. Didn't get anything on Thursday. So yeah, we could use this rain coming up here.
We could. How's it looking in your area? Been planting some corn, Tony?
Well, no, a lot of planting is done. But to Howard's point, we need some moisture. I mean, everything is pretty dry and pretty dusty, and a nice drink would be well welcomed right now. So it looks like we might get about. It's going to look like it's going to be a good rain from what the forecast looks like. So we'll take it.
That's what we've heard. You guys have been busy. The budget, I guess, is the top story right now. Howard, can you tell us a little bit? Fill us in on what's been going on?
Yeah. So a couple weeks ago, 10 days ago, something like that, we've First of all, we did completed all of our public hearings around the state. We did four of them, and we try to do with these public hearings kind of get to different geographic areas of the state. So we were in up in the Green Bay area, in Milwaukee, Hayward, and then in Wausau were the four big public hearings. So, and you know, they're pretty long days, obviously, and but to hear a lot of input from people. And so, and then on May 8th, the Joint Finance Committee began the first action. And one of the first things we did was we pulled out all of the policy out of the budget. Okay, this is stuff that marijuana legalization and just all these kinds of things that are policy that should be, I believe, in a separate bill. It shouldn't be tucked into a 1,917-page document that that you know, sitting on our desk from the governor. So, so we pulled that out, and a lot of those things, and there's some things in there that I like, you know, like the milk labeling, you know, milk should come from a cow. That's something that I support. Well, we didn't cherry pick. We pulled out the stuff that I supported as well. So, and then we also adopted the what are called standard budget adjustments. These are the normal increases, the re-estimates, debt service, for example. We have no, you know, it's not discretionary as whether or not you're going to pay your debt, you know, your bond payments and all that. So we fine-tuned all that. So and then there were a number of agencies that basically after the standard budget adjustments were made, that there were we were able to close those out. So so anyway, so now we're we got our fiscal updated fiscal bureau estimates last Thursday. And so now that we know kind of where we're at financially, you know, we can probably get to work here over the next probably 4 or 5 weeks and get going on the budget, really, I mean, in terms of the real substantive areas and get going.
So there are some things you agree with in it, though, right, in the budget in terms of some things that you'd like to see?
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, and, you know, I mean, hopeful, you know, our goal, at least my goal, is that we can pass a budget that you know, we support and that the governor will sign. I mean, that's the goal, I think. And also time frame wise, I hope we get this thing done before the end of June, you know, which is when the fiscal year ends. And however, you know, and if it doesn't happen, we're not like the federal government. So if it's not done till July 2nd, nothing shuts down. You know, the with the state of Wisconsin, your budget continues on at base level until the next budget is passed. So it isn't like you know, people in at the prison in basketball aren't going to get paid or whatever. You know, or school districts aren't going to get state aids. I mean, all this stuff continues at base level until the next budget is passed. So, having said that, I would sure love to get this thing done, though, well before the end of the fiscal year.
Tony?
No, like Howard said, we did our four listening sessions around the state. And we also, individually, we did listening sessions in our own area. And so we've heard a lot of good feedback. And you know, as far as the assembly, we're doing our spring surveys right now. So we're going to get that back as well. Matter of fact, I've already got a bunch of those already in the office. And I appreciate folks filling those out. So those are all the different information we will use as we craft the budget. But to Howard's point, some of those things that we go back to base budget, and we've done that for the last three budgets, and this is not something new. They actually did this when Governor Walker was in office. They went back to a base budget then. So this is something that historically the Joint Finance Committee has done. And to Howard's point, there were some things that was in the, I mean, we're going to talk about some EMS bills that Howard and I have introduced, and we've had some good hearings on. But some of that, sort of a version of that, was in the governor's budget. Well, we're running bills, and that's something that we both agree on, that if it's such a good idea, then run a bill and then have it eventually signed by the governor. And so those are the type of things we will do over the next several months as we craft and finish the state budget.
Do you hear a lot about school funding when you're out and about at functions such as the one we saw yet on Saturday?
I've heard, you know, I hear a lot of different things. Obviously, school funding was something that we always hear, particularly special education. And I fully admit we as a state need to do a better job on that. And I hope as we do with the state budget, we do better on special ed. But I will say, still hearing a lot of things, concerns at the federal level, and just to make sure I reiterate, that's something that Senator Markline and I, you know, we talk to our congressional delegation quite a bit. We talk, give them input, but right now there's a lot of unknowns. I think we need to just be a little bit more patient because there's a lot of different ideas and opinions being promoted on Facebook, etc., and other platforms. We, Howard and I, can't react to that, and because let's see what at the end of the day what actually happens. I think it's going to be far less than what people have articulated. You know, you get, I don't want to say it's fear mongering, but my humble opinion, it is a little bit of fear mongering. But right now, we just have to be very patient. But like I said, our goal is to do a very good budget like we've had the last several years. And it's something that we invest in our priorities. Schools will be one of those. Infrastructure will be another one. Our health care, our nursing homes, all these things that are so important, particularly for our area, especially with an aging population.
Or did you want to comment on that?
Yeah, and, you know, I did want to mention, you know, last Thursday, we did get the updated nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau estimates for what the expected tax collections are going to be over the next couple of years. So, and over a three-year period, the expected collections are down about $335 million. So, which is, it's not insignificant. And I was expecting somewhat of a decline anyway. So, and what I've been kind of sharing with a lot of people is, you know, there's this headline, you know, billions of dollars of surplus. Well, we need to be cautious, you know, because our cost to continue, which largely is Medicaid, is like $1.8 billion of cost to continue. That's doing nothing. That's got to come out of there kind of first. So anyway, so, you know, as we go into the next budget, you know, I think we need to be a little bit cautious in terms of just the overall approach to the budget. And, you know, I mean, we got resources, but it's not nearly as much as what I think kind of the headline number is. And, you know, and obviously one of the things that, you know, I hear from people as Tony Kirst does about various requests. And what I tell people often is that in isolation, your request is very appropriate. And the key thing there is in isolation. If your request for X funding is the only thing that we had to worry about, but the thing is, we have to worry about everything. We have to worry about the totality of the budget, so and impact to the state. So, and that's where, you know, it's a matter of weighing various priorities. So, you know, anyway, we got the numbers from Fiscal Bureau last Thursday. They're not bad. They're sometimes in the past on the May 15th is always the. In an odd numbered year is always when we get these updated numbers. And for finance geeks like us, you know, we wait for that day to kind of see where we're at. And many years we've had bumps, you know, where tax collections were higher than what they had expected. And it's good news. And now we got an extra, you know, $100 million to fund things. So this time it went the other way. And again, it wasn't unexpected. We had been kind of expecting this. A bit, I track the tax collections month by month as they come in. And, it wasn't a shock.
Mm-hmm. The April had a few snafus too, didn't it, in terms of mail and different things that were going on?
Yeah, it was interesting. So the month of April is a big deal for the Department of Revenue, because that is obviously April 15th is when people file their tax returns. And, you know, the money coming out of people's paychecks like every week or every 2 weeks, that, you know, that's pretty predictable. Okay, it's fairly stable and stuff, but people's, you know, what they end up paying or the refunds they get on April 15th, there can be big swings in that based on the stock market, you know, capital gains and that sort of thing. So now this year, the one thing that happened was, and actually it was a couple things, but with the income taxes, the income taxes, the tax returns that were due April 15th were mailed to Madison, okay? And there was a Postal Service sorter issue. So all those tax returns got sent by mistake to Milwaukee. And then it took Milwaukee Postal Service some time to send them back to Madison. And then apparently what they do is they separate the checks from the tax returns. And then the checks get sent back to Milwaukee. So there was a lot of these checks and tax returns that came in originally about April 15th or close to it, but they never got cleared until in May. So that amounted to $230 million, which is not insignificant. That's 1 month, you know. So anyway, the April individual tax collections were down over 9% compared to the prior year, which, I mean, again, the headline is like, that's a pretty substantial drop. But when you start looking at some of the details in it, it can be explained, you know. So sales tax for the month of April was up 4%. However, what was interesting in that is that there was a significant increase in auto sales in the month of April, about 13% increase in auto sales, which they believe is largely tariff driven, that people want to, you know, people that may have waited till June, July to buy a car are worried about tariffs. So, you know, price increases. So they were purchasing them in April. And I've heard that from some of the local dealers as well. So you know, that 4% sales tax increase in the month of April is not sustainable. It's not, you know, we can't forecast that out, because those are sales that we normally would have in the next month or two down the road.
Tony, you talked a little bit about some, you know, people talking online and, you know, fear and those kind of things. One of the things that has come up lately is cuts to Badger Care. Mm-hmm. You know, have you heard much about that, or is that something you looked at?
We've looked at that, and we've talked a lot about, once again, to our congressional. I mean, I talked to Congressman Van Orten at least three times last week. And once again, I just want to caution people. Let's just wait and see. I think they're well aware of, especially the need of Badger Care in our area, because we have a large, once again, Richland County, Juneau County, all in excess with Medicaid, all with an excess of 26%, 27%, 28% for Juneau County receive Medicaid through those counties. So I understand how important that is to so many people, and that's something we are watching. But once again, the devils are going to be in the details once they get done with something at the federal level. I have not seen that, but I know that's something we do talk about, and we do look at that. And as far as back to, I do want to emphasize what something Howard talked about, the cost to continue. And when we do all those listening sessions, there's approximately $6 billion worth of asks out there. So all these great ideas, and to Howard's point, there are a lot of really good ideas. But the problem is we only have X number of dollars. And I know everybody sees that the state has the $4 billion surplus, but I want to emphasize that is like the vast majority of that money's one-time money. And the way I like to articulate this to people is, remember during the years of COVID, a lot of individuals in our area got stimulus checks. You know, the county got money, the school districts got money, the townships got money, the cities got money. Everybody got these large payments. Well, for the vast majority, that was one time. And to Howard's point, when you look at tax collections, sales tax collections during that time, like in 2021, the sales tax collection was 9.6%. That's more than double what it would normally is. In 2002, it was 9.2%. In 2023, it was 6.8%. In 24, it was like more normal, down in the 4% range. But my point is, during those years, those peak years of COVID, when all this cash was coming in from the federal government, people spent that money. And we as a state collected that money through the sales tax and, in certain sense, of the income tax. And that's how we kind of built this large one-time money. But moving forward, when you talk about the cost to continue, so what's one example of the cost to continue? Well, remember last session we did a shared revenue bill. Part of that shared revenue was a 1%. You would get the sales, whatever the state sales tax increase rate, the municipalities would also share in that. Well, that's a $68 million addition to our costs continue, and that's something that now we build into our base budget. And that's why Howard's point, we got to be just really careful on how we build things into the base budget, that we don't build it in. We build it in the base, that's something we're responsible for heading, you know, into the future. And so we just got to be very cautious about this budget, but also future budgets.
Anything else you'd like to add, Howard?
No, just to follow up on the one-time, you know, surplus and stuff. You know, again, when people you know, schools, for example, you know, hey, you know, you got this big surplus, you know, just send, you know, give us more money. And, you know, I asked them, so you want one-time money then? No, we want this, not just this year, next year, but, you know, well into the future. So, you know, again, that's where, and I, you know, the last budget, we had a similar situation in the last budget where we had quite a bit of one-time money. And, you know, we funded ongoing commitments, and strategically, you know, we when it came to new building construction, for example, on campuses and that sort of thing, instead of borrowing money, which we normally do in bonding for those buildings, we paid cash. Also, the last time we paid down debt, you know, we paid down about $480 million of debt, which has an impact, you know, in the future, because we don't have that interest expense, you know, to pay now well into the future. So, you know, that's examples of what we did last budget, and there's a chance that we may use similar techniques, I think, this year, you know, with the budget. So we're not, again, as Tony said, we're not committing ourselves to ongoing expenses into the future that, you know, we may not have the resources.
We've talked a lot about on this program about public school funding, but the other thing in the headlines today was higher education funding, and certainly there's a big ask for that for the coming year too, right?
Yes, I think they're looking at $885 million, I think, is what President Jay Rothman is asking, and so and you know, I can't make any, you know, comments and to whether or not, you know, we're going to make, you know, what kind of funding we're going to have for the UW, you know. So one of the challenges we have at both the K-12 level and at the university level is just a demographic issue, you know, and that is just fewer and fewer students, you know, which, you know, we see it out here, obviously, with the in our K-12 districts. I mean, there are very few districts. I think I'm only aware of one district in my Senate district that has growing enrollment. That's in Oregon, which is basically suburban Madison. Other than that, it's, you know, the enrollment is declining. That is, that ripple effect is making its way through to higher education and to the university. And so, and I know Jay Rothman is aware of this. It's a challenge. And, you know, there's just going to be a lot fewer students going into the UW system into the future. So, you know, and again, that's something that it's a challenge for Jay Rothman. He's aware of it. He's a smart guy. And so, you know, I'm sure those are all things we'll be weighing too as a budget committee.
Mm-hmm. Did you want anything, Tony?
Well, I know we've talked about this before on this program, just to Howard's point about the demographics. You know, in the 60s, when I was born, you know, the birth rate was 25 babies for every 1,000 people per year. That birth rate now is 10 babies for every, you know, 1,000 people for every 1 year. So it is just drastically dropped. And you see that in our numbers, especially when you talk about K-12. You know, there's roughly 40,000 less students today than there was even 8 years ago in our K-12. And so when you look at it, like I think I mentioned before on this program, like in 2026 will be our lowest graduating class. When you look at, you know, high school graduation rates, you know, I have 18 school districts in just that my assembly seat touches, and Adams Friendship, which is obviously in Adams County, which is the northern part of my district. I mean, they've lost over 200 students in the last 10 years. Now, once again, I want to make sure I articulate this. This isn't people moving out. It's just simply we do not have the birth rates. We got the graduating classes, but we don't have those kindergartens coming back up. And that is throughout our district. To Howard's point, the only district of mine that's actually growing is the Dells, Wisconsin Dells. Everybody else, unfortunately, is declining. And I think when you look at the UW, the one thing that does frustrate me about the UW, what I believe the vast majority of in our state and our listening area have no idea about, is UW is our largest employer of the state. You know, there's roughly 72,000 state employees. You know, some of that paid with federal money and state money, but the UW has 37,000 of those employees. And so I find it a little bit interesting when, for instance, Platteville several years ago, I give the chancellor a lot of credit because they had a 25% decrease in enrollment numbers, but yet they had a 56% increase in administrative staff. And so they had to make some hard choices. They did some layoffs. They did some, you know, people that were retiring. But the news said that due to budget cuts, they were laying people off. If you ever talk to the chancellor down there, she will say, I needed to right size the ship based on the number of students that I had. And it's interesting, Green Bay, University of, you know, Wisconsin and Green Bay did the same thing. Oshkosh did the same thing. And I personally think a lot of our campuses, particularly, to be fair, Madison needs to do the same thing, because I think over the years we've gotten a lot of administrative bloat, I hate to say, you know, and I think we need to kind of retool and say, okay, do we need all these positions? And I will say this, one thing about the governor's budget, and once again, I know we went back to base, but what does not get articulated in the media, unfortunately, is the governor's budget would have increased our state by increased spending by 21%. We would increase staff by 1,300 positions. So I ask many of my friends and neighbors around the area, did you get a 21% increase? Do we really need all that additional staff? And so that's why one of the reasons why we go back to base and we build from the base, that, you know, base budget that we all agree on. And so that's something I think we need to do a better job about, is saying, you know, let's get back to some basics, because UW does a great job. My daughter is finishing school there, and they're a wonderful university. It's just, I do think there's a little bit of things that we need to take a look at when you talk about administrative bloat, especially at some of the bigger campuses.
Representative Kurtz and Senator Markline on our morning show today. We'll be back after these words on the morning show.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
This is Paul from Prescription Center. For over 40 years, we have been a trusted member of the health care of our community. We've always been here for everyone. From West Seminary Street, where it all started, to the hospital, and now to Saxonville Road, we have provided honest advice, low prices, and with the help of many of our friends, a pay-it-forward account to help those that can't afford their medication. We are humbled by the trust we have earned. We have always made every effort to make pharmacy affordable to all. We accept all insurances because you deserve to have your plan honored. The only area pharmacy to take TRICARE and CHAMP VA. What better way to say thank you to those who served? We thank all for their trust. If you want this type of service, let us be your pharmacy of choice.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
Now is the time to make sure your vehicle is tuned up for summer. Hi, this is Sean from Sean's Auto Repair and Performance. We'll check your coolant, do a radiator flush, or give you that tune-up you need. Or maybe it's a new set of tires or an alignment. We can do that too. Whether it's cars, trucks, or SUVs, you'll get courteous, quality, professional service for imports and domestics. Call us now at 608-649-AUTO. That's 649-2886. Sean's Auto Repair and Performance, 184 East Mill Street, downtown Richland Center. People who care about your car.
Are you looking for a meaningful way to give back to your community? Passages is looking for compassionate, motivated volunteers to join our team. We provide men, women, and children survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault with free, confidential services regardless of age, sex, or gender identity. We have a variety of volunteer opportunities available, from yard cleanup, donation sorting and organizing, and fundraising support, to shelter advocacy and survivor support. There are also a couple of larger outdoor projects that would be great for teams. Do you want to share a skill? We're also launching new life skills programming and are seeking volunteers to lead classes such as yoga, sewing, crocheting, cooking, meditation, grounding exercises, and more. Whether you're interested in direct client support or behind-the-scenes help, there's a place for you at Passages. Did you know that every hour you volunteer helps Passages meet its grant match? Learn more by visiting our website at passagesrc.com. and click on the I Want to Help tab. There you will find a list of opportunities and a volunteer application. Join us in making a difference, one life, one step at a time.
Right now at U.S. Cellular, you can get our best deal ever and pay $15 per line when you get four lines. That's the same as the overpriced latte I just ordered.
Whoa, man, what do you have against lattes?
Oh, just saying, $15 per line for four lines is a pretty hard deal to beat.
Okay, but is your deal made with co-op-raised beans and house-made non-GMO oat milk?
No, but $15 per line for four lines at U.S. Cellular is pretty sweet savings.
Not sweeter than this matcha cold foam.
Yeah, that's not what I ordered. U.S. Cellular, built for us. Terms apply. See uscellular.com for details.
It's good to look into the windows you'll be looking out. The perfect place to look into new windows is PMI Windows of Lone Rock. PMI offers premium vinyl windows custom made to order with the latest advancements in glass and hardware technologies, fusion welded frames and sashes, and the industry's best lifetime no-nonsense transferable warranty. Windows are not all created equal. Let PMI custom tailor premium vinyl windows just for you. Call 583-7200 for a free estimate.
Got stumps? Call Titus Osborne today for a free estimate. With over 15 years of professional stump grinding and removal experience, Titus is insured and ready to handle your project. Don't let those stumps linger. Get the removal scheduled. Customer satisfaction is a must, and Titus is committed to providing fast, reliable, no-hassle service. Call 608-604-7757 now for all your stump removal needs. 604-7757. Titus Osborne, your go-to expert for stump removal.
Join the legacy at Scott's Industries, a proud family-owned business for 75 years. They're expanding and looking for dedicated team members. Enjoy competitive wages, benefits, and a $3 per hour night shift bonus. No experience necessary, just bring your enthusiasm. Apply in person Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at 810 East Nebraska Street in Muscadet. Or give them a call, 739-3171, to learn more. Scott's Industries, where opportunity meets tradition.
Brownfield Ag News has a new podcast that focuses on the latest advancements and breakthroughs in the agricultural sector. This weekly podcast features interviews about cutting-edge technologies, practices, and research that are transforming farming and food production. Each episode delves into the latest developments in the field, offering insights into how new innovations are reshaping farming, improving efficiency, and addressing global challenges. The program aims to keep agricultural professionals, researchers, and enthusiasts informed about the rapidly evolving field of agriculture. By highlighting new technologies and practices, it helps listeners stay ahead of industry trends and make informed decisions about adopting innovations in their own work. The Innovations in Agriculture podcast is available in the Agra America podcast directory or wherever you get your podcasts.
Representative Tony Kurtz, Senator Howard Markline on our morning show today in the studios. We wanted to talk a lot about some things coming up here. And I know one of the things we wanted to talk about, Howard, was a resolution for David Martin.
So we were on the Senate was on the floor last week. And one of the things that we did was pass a resolution recognizing David Martin, who passed away recently. And David Martin was a state representative up in the Neenah, Menasha area years ago. I want to say maybe in the 60s for quite a period of time. Was had a pretty distinguished career in the state assembly. But then he retired to Muscadet, and where he became quite active in the communities on the Lower Wisconsin State Riverway Board, Three Eagles Foundation, Muscadet Chamber, Southwest Tech Board. So anyway, so very active in the community, and I saw him at a lot of different community meetings and events that I went to. So anyway, we're happy to have recognized David Martin not only for his service in the state assembly many years ago, but also for his service in the Muscadet area.
I know, too. Tony, you wanted to talk about rural EMS. That's always a topic in your area.
It's National EMS Week.
Yeah.
So that's a very appropriate thing. But no, this, as you know, EMS is so critical for our area. And it's been under a lot of strain lately. And it's been not only in it, and it's something I give Senator Markline a lot of credit. He's been working on this for years. And, you know, when I was fortunate to get elected, I know we've both been working on it together. But yes, we introduced three additional EMS bills. You know, when Howard and I testified about a month ago on these bills, one of the things I said is, I already talked about the shared revenue bill, but part of the shared revenue bill was a thing called funding assistance program. That funding assistance program went from $2.2 million up to $25 million. And that kind of helped a lot of EMS providers, including all the ones in our area like CAS and Richland Center. But these bills will continue to do that. Right now, one of the bills is when an EMS provider goes out to a scene and they may treat somebody or they may go to your home and treat you on scene, but they don't transport you, a lot of time they actually can't get reimbursed for that. And so we have one piece of legislation that will allow them to get reimbursed for that at a little higher rate, and that will help a lot of providers. One of the other ones is through the technical colleges. Like right now, let's say Southwest Tech has a EMS class, they put on some courses, and they don't fill the class. Unfortunately, a lot of times they'll cancel the course. Well, you know, that hurts five or six people that were going to take the class. That's going to help our rural areas. Right now, there's the other bill would actually pay for those other slots and actually open them up to other parts of the state. And so if they don't fill a class, we're going to make sure they still hold that class. That was something several years ago, you may remember Senator Markline and I, along with Travis Tranel and Todd Novak, did a series of EMS listening sessions around the entire district. And that's one of the things that came out about how some of the courses were canceled because the classes weren't filled. And then the other bill would allow, instead of having EMS on like a countywide, you would have more of a regional. So you could go across county lines, and that will also help with the levy limits and everything like that, provide more funding for EMS providers.
Indeed. Very important for our area, Howard. And, you know, we're fortunate that when we call 911, somebody responds. I think there are some places in the state where that doesn't happen.
I've heard. Yeah. And, you know, and again, you know, we take it for granted. You know, we just assume that when, you know, we call 911, somebody is going to show up. And, you know, in our rural areas, especially during the daytime, when people are at jobs and working and stuff, you know, it's, you know, staffing is a big issue. So, so on a lot of these issues in these three bills really relate to staffing and trying to make it a little bit easier. One of those bills, too, that would provide some financial assistance to people when they take these courses, whether it's funded by the agency, whether it's funded by, you know, local fire EMS unit, or whether the person takes it themselves, would provide some funding for that too. So, and then the other thing I guess I did want to mention was the hours and the scope of service and all that. And it's incredibly. In fact, I hear that's one of the things I hear about from rural EMS people, and I heard it on Saturday night in Muscadet. You know, what's going on with the hours, Howard? And still, so, and what ends up happening is the state Department of Health Services increases the training hours by 40 hours. Okay. And the more hours they add to training for our volunteers, the fewer people we get. So in this bill, it would require the EMS board to send a report to the legislature on what is your rationale for increasing these hours? Because right now, there tends to be kind of they're pointing at each other. Well, the national scope of service says this, or the state scope of practice says this. We want to know what is driving this, because, again, I can go to any of my rural areas and, you know, and if the hours increase is appropriate, no problem. But I think some often these increases in the hours of training are more oriented towards the Madisons, the Janesvilles, the Milwaukees, which may be wonderful there, but, you know, it doesn't affect or it doesn't really or has an adverse effect on places like Lake Muscadet and Blue River and, you know, our rural areas. So, you know, we need to be sensitive. They need to be sensitive to that. And right now, nobody is really, you know, they're not telling anybody really what's the rationale for these increases in hours of training.
Nurses, too. We're very thankful to have the nurses that we do, too.
Absolutely. So over the last 13 years, there's been it's called the Advanced Practice Registered Nurse Modernization Act, and it's something basically allowing those type of nurse practitioners. These are your certified registered nurse anesthetists that obviously work right here in our wonderful Richland Hospital. You got certified midwives, nurse practitioners, and clinical nurse specialists. These are nurses that have gone back to school, that are on the top of their game, and basically this bill would allow them to practice at their full scope of their clinical skills. And unfortunately, over the last several years, you know, the bill has gone to the governor's office desk twice. Those, unfortunately, have been vetoed. This session, we've worked very hard and I know this is going to shock people, but in a very bipartisan way, we've met with the governor's office. I can't tell you how many different times we've met with their office to come up with an agreement, and we finally have an agreement. We had the first hearing last week in the health committee. They're going to exec that in the health committee in the assembly this week, and I'm pretty confident it's going to be a unanimous ballot. But basically, once again, this just is a really good thing for our rural healthcare, especially all our critical access hospitals in the area, to let our wonderful nurses that are working so hard and so diligently, but those that are at the top of their game, the top of their skill set, to work at their full practice authority. And I think it's something that's going to be very good for rural communities.
NFL draft recently wrapped up, Howard. That was big for Wisconsin, wasn't it?
It sure was. And I didn't make it up there. I'm kind of glad after I saw the photos and stuff, I'm kind of glad I didn't. But, you know, it had a big impact on shining the spotlight on the state of Wisconsin. It was, you know, it's like kind of having one of these big golf tournaments and that kind of thing. It's kind of neat to have the national and international spotlight shine on Wisconsin. But I was, you know, interested in this too, not just as a football fan, but also from the economic impact. And we don't have the final numbers yet, or if they're out there, I haven't seen them yet. I think it'll be another month or so till we get what the final numbers are. But it was projected that there would be a $94 million impact to the state of Wisconsin. Okay. All of that, and that's hotels, that's restaurants, food. You know, a couple of people probably drank some beer during that time. But all of that's subject to the 5% sales tax. So why do we care here in Richland County or Grant County or Iowa County? Well, obviously, as Tony talked earlier, one penny of that comes back to our shared through the shared revenue formula. So again, it's you know, we may not, people, non-football fans may not care at all about that event in Green Bay, but it had a big impact and will have a big impact on our shared revenue that trickles down throughout the state of Wisconsin. And so, and again, as one of the, and Tony was front and center when that shared revenue bill was negotiated almost 2 years ago now. And so when there's events, I mentioned a golf tournament in Kohler or the Brewers or whoever, you know, any event anywhere in the state of Wisconsin, we should be cheering them on, because I don't care whether it's a snowmobile event in northern Wisconsin or, you know, any event in the state of Wisconsin has a positive impact on the entire state. So, again, we're grateful to have the NFL draft here last month. And from what I hear from the people that went, said it was a wonderful, wonderful event. And I'm glad that our local communities here will benefit to some extent in the future.
Most definitely. This is another thing from the headlines today. I just wanted to get your take on this. It was from the Republican Party of Wisconsin from this past weekend, but they're talking about squabbling within the party. You know, we always talk about squabbling across the party lines, but what's your take on that, Tony? Is there a lot of dissension in the Republican Party these days?
You know, I think it's with... I would say no. I mean, I think the discussion is you have different philosophies, you have different approaches on how to achieve certain objectives. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, Republicans and Democrats, but you also have, you know, varying views in the Republican Party on how you want to achieve certain things, just as you do in the Democrat Party. You see that too, about how you have different things that they made disagree on. I don't necessarily call it a squabble. I think it's a good. They aired out a lot of frustrations, a lot of internal things that they've talked about over the last several months. I think there's a little bit of reflection on the Supreme Court race. You know, that was something that obviously as Republicans we were a little upset about, and how do we do better in spring elections and things like that. But I don't think it's a massive riff. I actually think it was worse a couple years ago than it is now. I think it's actually a lot better now than it was a couple years ago.
Howard, what's your take on that?
I didn't attend the convention in this weekend, so I don't know any more than probably what's in the media. So, you know, when I, you know, attend local GOP party, you know, functions and that sort of thing, again, I don't sense that. And I've been to a lot of Lincoln Day dinners and that sort of thing over the last few months. So I don't, you know, I don't feel that there's a whole lot of dissension. And obviously, you know, in any group, not everybody agrees, you know, on anything. I don't care. You can go to church, you know, and a church committee, you know, people don't always agree on things. So, you know, and I, to some extent, I guess if there's some differences, maybe that may not all be bad. You know, it's sometimes good to have, mm-hmm. you know, everybody's thinking identically, you know, one of my former partners in our CPA firm told me many, many years ago, he said, if we agree on everything, then probably one of us isn't needed here. Mm-hmm. You know, which I think is, you know, I mean, it's true. Sometimes it's good to have different perspectives. So so anyway, I don't really have much more to add in that.
Tony?
No, I do want to. Howard makes a very important point about the fact that people need to talk. And it doesn't matter Republicans sitting down at the table together versus, you know, Democrats sitting down at the table, or like I mentioned about the bill, the APRN bill that we did with the, you know, the governor's office and other stakeholders. And you know, that is a point where we sat around the table and said, okay, why has this failed over the last 13 years and what can we do better? Because we sat down at the table, we aired our grievances, and I think it's much better to do that than, you know, legislating on Facebook or Twitter or whatever social platform you're on. When you get around a table, you can actually get a good product on. And so obviously those individuals, and like I said, to Howard's point, I didn't go this weekend either. I was too busy sitting on a tractor and trying to get some crops planted. But the fact of the matter is, that we're talking, that both sides are talking, especially when we're in Madison, is a good thing. And it's something, it's interesting, on Saturday when I'm at that wonderful event, you know, the Run for Grace, people want us to work together. They want us to solve problems. And it's interesting, solving problems sometimes is not easy, and you have to talk, you have to have a disagreement, and then finally say what's better for the greater good of the state. And I think that's where we're at right now. And I'm actually pleasantly surprised about the direction we're going right now. I think we're heading the right direction. We got a lot of work to do, but I feel very good about where we're at.
We're into state park season too. I know you're a big proponent of your state parks, the state parks in Wisconsin that we have.
Yes, and it's the 125th anniversary of our state park system.
Oh.
I have more state parks in my Senate district than any other senator. So, it's just a wonderful treasure that we have. And so, and I've been, since I've been on Joint Finance Committee, been a strong advocate for, for our parks, and especially the, kind of restructuring our camping fees. When I got on Joint Finance, and my family, we go camping every year. It's a family tradition. So, when I got on Joint Finance, and we typically go up to Peninsula State Park, and we were paying $15 a night for our camping. It's Peninsula State Park. The campsite next to me was occupied by somebody from Illinois. They were paying $17 a night, $2 more. Meanwhile, state taxpayers were subsidizing my camping fees to the tune of about 25%. And at Peninsula State Park, you could not get, they're full, absolutely packed. And the way it works is we have to make reservations 11 months to the day at 9 a.m. And by 9:03, every campsite's gone. Okay. Now, if you're in the private sector, you run a restaurant, let's say, okay, and you've got people lined up down the street, around the block to get in your restaurant, and they can't get in, what do? You raise the fees a bit. And so we've got basically four very, very, very popular state parks for camping. And so what we did over a number of years is we permitted the Department of Natural Resources to increase the fees, on some of those high demand, again, up in Peninsula State Park, for example. Devil's Lake's another one in our area here that's, it's packed. I mean, it's a very popular. So we've been able, and they've done that, and you know what's happened? They're full. They're still full, and it's generated millions and millions of dollars of revenue, which we've been able to plow back into those park systems and those parks, whether it's upgrading their water treatment systems, their water systems, campsites, and all that. So I'm happy with the strategy that we've implemented over the last number of years. I was at Governor Dodge a week or so ago chatting with the folks over there. They're busy. They told me, I think it was over Mother's Day weekend, that 50% of their campers and visitors are from out of state. Okay, so, the non-residents are paying a premium to come here. But you know what? It doesn't stop them at all. It's probably the cheapest part of their whole trip is the camping fee that they pay. So, again, it's 125th anniversary. Congratulations to our parks. Again, we've got a lot of them around here, and I encourage people to get out and enjoy the parks. Also, I mentioned the high-demand parks like Governor Dodge is one of them, Peninsula, Devil's Lake. We've got a lot of less popular ones, Yellowstone, for example. Those, we kept the rates low, the camping fees low. So for families that are on a budget, and there are a lot of people that can't pay the premium to go to a Devil's Lake, there are a lot of affordable options for them. And so we've got to, recognize that in structuring the fees. And but I'm looking forward to getting camping here in a few weeks. Hopefully it's a little warmer than what it is today.
Tis the season. Tony, anything else you wanted to add today?
Well, and to, just to piggyback on that, that's something as we look at this state budget, we have the Knowles-Nelson is something, the Knowles-Nelson stewardship. That's something I think we're going to work very diligently hard on to get reauthorized, but also focusing on maintaining and improving a lot of our wonderful parks and trails that we have in the state. We're very fortunate. We just need to make sure we keep those up to snuff in the best possible condition we can. So
today is National Elected Officials Day as well. So thanks for what you guys do.
I can't believe there's a day for that. Huh?
Well, thank you, Phil.
You bet.
Wonderful listeners.
Good to have you. Representative Tony Kurtz, Senator Howard Markline. Tony, you'll be back next month.
I will.
And Howard, you'll be back sometime this summer, it sounds like.
I will.
All right. Sounds good. We'll have more coming up tomorrow on the morning show.
Feeling better is about feeling all kinds of things. You want to feel healthy, sure. But you also want to feel heard and understood, valued, even, well, loved. That's what we want, too. We're Amplify Health, and we think the best way to care for someone is to care about them. That's why all our treatments include a little empathy. Welcome to healthcare that's all about caring. Welcome to Amplify Health by Gunderson. A little empathy changes everything.
At Cardinal Glass CG, they believe a great job should come with great benefits. That's why they offer competitive wages, a 401k with monthly profit sharing, and career growth opportunities. Work in a clean, climate-controlled environment with both 8 and 12-hour shifts available. Night and weekend shifts even come with premium pay. If you're ready to start a career where hard work pays off, visit 1024 East Madison Street, Spring Green. To apply in person, Monday through Friday, 9 to 3, or call 608-588-9831 today.
Hi, Garrett here with Vitesnik Power Sports in Richland Center. Sure, we have low prices and guarantees, but what really sets us apart is our service department. Our service team has over 200 years of combined experience ensuring quick turnarounds and top-notch satisfaction. With our newest quality control measures, we're cutting wait times and boosting appointments. Don't wait. Make your appointment today. When it comes to service,